Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Empowerment Hour. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, and a crew. And I got another show for you. Got Dr. Bruce. We're recapturing the African mind. So I'll get ready to have it right now. Call your friend. Call your friend. Let's do it. Oh, yeah. There's no better love.
That's what I got.
Yeah. Better love. There is no better love than for self and kind, no better love. Welcome to African American Empowerment. It's the show for your people, our people, black people, African American, Negroes, whoever you want to call yourself. It's for the formerly enslaved to recover, to heal, to get culture, to get education, to get information. It's all about self-love. We have to begin to love ourselves again, treat each other really well, engage in good, positive family activities and actions to be able to really look at ourselves, right? And so this show is an example of what we can do when we come together. And we have to work on collaborations. We've got to learn to commit to one another again and to build trust in our families and in our communities. And the work begins within ourselves first. That work begins with you and me doing the work of working on ourselves, working on our hearts and our minds to begin to love exactly who we are as we are, just as we are, our brownness, our blackness, our darkness, our lightness, our hair, our kinky hair, our nappy hair, whatever you want to call it, we got to love it because God gave it to us just the way we are. So we don't have to be like other people anymore. We could be our authentic, original selves, loving the beauty that God gave us because God made us, and we have to return to our rightfulness and our greatness, just as we are. So now let's get to the tenets of the NAAEA. It's really simple. It's the peace concept, peace in our hearts, peace in our minds, peace in our communities. But there's a platform that will allow us to do the work of working on ourselves collectively. Here's the peace concept. First is peace. Peace is politics. It's a political agenda. We have to have a political agenda to continue to do the work, to refine ourselves and do the hard things, right? But we need a political agenda wherever we are. We just do. We're going to have that agenda that works for us to do the things that we need to do to empower ourselves politically, wherever we are, in every city, town, or state that has African Americans or black people. We need a political agenda. Next is economics. We need an economic platform to teach us how to manage money. Oh, boy, do we need it. We got it coming through our hands, but it's running right out. And so we have to have an economic agenda that really speaks to how we understand the importance of money, and how to use it, how to invest it, how to save it, and how to build institutions that define our own reality, those institutions that educate and develop and train ourselves. Training centers that help us to reform and refine ourselves so that we can return to our rightful greatness. Next is the A. That's athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. You got to have a health, wellness, fitness, nutrition agenda. That agenda speaks to really looking at how we need to take care of our physical bodies and our minds. And we have to be able to do that work to simply take care of your body. Take care of your temple. That's mental, physical, and emotional management of self. How are you going to do that? You're going to have to push away from the table. You're going to have to make some commitments to yourself from a dietary standpoint. Get away from the junk. Work out. Train. You don't have to be a world-class athlete, but you have to be able to take care of your body and your mind. Your mental health is very important to making sure that you're around for the next generation. And now let's see. C is relevant cultural activities for our people and our communities, just like this one, right? Relevant culture that educate us on what we need to do to return to our rightful greatness. Cultural programs that really speak to our culture, our history, our legacy, to be able to build confidence in ourselves. We know that if our young people have relevant cultural programs, they get inspired, they get motivated. So let's give it to our young people. And lastly, it's the E, it's education. It's that comprehensive education that really speaks to talking about we need to do to continue to educate ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally, and culturally. And now for this Stan Macklin moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just,
man,
I
we
just
got
love
the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Boy, oh boy, do we need those institutions that define our own reality. And again, it's the tenets of the NAAEA, right? Where else can you find a group of regular, everyday African Americans trying to do something for everyday African Americans? Right here. So we'll continue to work on working on ourselves and doing the work every day because we're committed to it. So today we got Dr. Bruce. I want to just say before we get started with Dr. Bruce and then go over to Brother George for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment that we, again, must do everything that we can within our power to become the best that we can be. And now we're going over to Brother George for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Brother George, I'm going to bring you in just a second. Trying to find Brother George. Well, I don't see Brother George on the line. But since we don't have Brother George right now, we'll continue to carry on with the show. So let's look at really thinking about what's next for us. We got Dr. Bruce coming up, and I want to see if I can find Dr. Bruce on here. See if this is Dr. Bruce. Is that you? Dr. Bruce, are you there? Okay, Brother George said he's there. Okay, I see you. All right. Brother George, you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
All right.
You ready?
All right.
You ready?
Welcome. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. All right, let's go to the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Bring it, brother.
Thank you, brother. Today, I would like to, my Kwanzaa principle is going to be Kuji Chagalia, which is self-determination. To define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. And I think that that's vitally important that we keep those principles in mind and keep that one in mind in particular. Today, in the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read from a book called The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. A compensatory code, compensatory counter-racist code. And this is by Neely Fuller Jr. So the question is asked, when asked why you use time and energy thinking, speaking, and or acting, trying to replace white supremacy racism, balance between people, say, this is what you say. According to compensatory logic, it is the assignment of my existence. Explanation. According to compensatory logic, every person who is produced into the known universe is given an assignment that is the assignment. The assignment is presented to that person in a form of one major problem that has proven to be greater than all other problems presented to that person. Through the process of thinking, speaking, and acting to solve the one major problem, the person begins to realize that thinking I'm sorry, thinking, speaking, and acting to solve the one main problem, the person begins to realize that one major problem is the only thing that he or she does that appears to result from logic that is constructed. In addition, the person begins to realize that his or her thought, speech, and action that is not intended to help to solve the one major problem usually produces a result that is non-productive. According to compensatory counter-racist logic, the system of white supremacy racism is the most powerful force for the organized maintenance of non-justice, non-balance between people, among the people of the known universe. Therefore, it is the assignment of every person in the known universe who chooses to think, speak, and act according to compensatory counter-racist logic to use that logic to replace the system of white supremacy with the system of justice. Now, I think that's an interesting thing, and I also think that he's absolutely right. I think that we as people are trying to figure out ways that we can get together and coexist as human beings with equal opportunity for everyone. And I'm pretty sure that that's what that statement is saying. And now it's back to you, brother.
Thank you, Brother George, for a great segment. Again, as always, give us something, that one thing that we could do to come together.
Well, I think following the compensatory code, it's an excellent book that you should get and see the logic behind, how he put together, this compensatory code to counter the racism that exists in the world. And I think that really purchasing that book and beginning to read it to understand so that you can see where he expands on his ideas of how to solve this problem. And I think that he'll have some interesting things because he breaks it down into different categories of social contact between human beings. And it's very interesting.
Before we go over to Dr. Bruce, about a little bit about Neely Fuller. I know you're Neely Fuller Jr. I know you're reading in the book today, but kind of give us a little bit, because we're a little early on time right now, about Neely Fuller before we get to Dr. Bruce, and maybe a little bit about Dr. Wilson as well.
Right. Well, you know that Neely Fuller was Dr. Wilson's mentor. And that's an interesting thing, because he's still alive and she's passed on, and she was younger than what he is. But he was the first one that actually broke down and gave a real definition as to how racism existed in the world, racism, white supremacy existed in the world, and how it functioned. And she said that he was the first one that actually really clearly, made it elementary for someone to understand what was going on in the world and why racism existed in the first place and how to combat it and how to survive in a world, that's basically built on white supremacy. And so Dr. Frances Cress Wilson, she wrote a book of her own called The ISIS Papers. And the foundation of the things that she writes is in what she was taught and mentored by between her father and Neely Fuller. And so, if that's that's about you know, what I know about the two.
Okay, that'll work. All right, well, we don't have Dr. Bruce on the line right now. I don't see his number, Brother George, so we're going to just kind of carry on a little bit before we get hopefully he'll come in. He said he'll come in around 15 after. We're running a little early. So
yeah.
I'll just do my young, gifted, and black segment then. Hang on, Brother George. Who needs it most?
Okay, brother.
Right? Who needs help the most? We do. Who needs love the most? We do. Who needs to work with ourselves? We do. We need it so bad. We need to come together so bad. We need to start loving ourselves again. And y'all know it's true. You do. If you're listening live, if you're listening online, think about how when you talk about African Americans and the things that we went through, if we don't need to start loving each other again, right? So when you go down into our communities, there's a lot of dysfunction and a lot of hurt that we haven't recovered from. This is an effort to begin the healing process, to begin the recovery process one person at a time. You can't beat it when you think about how can I begin to do the work of just working on myself first. We can't change the world. And I always say when you're on that airplane, when they give you the safety tips and about what to do, it says put when the mask come down, put your mask on first. So if you would take care of yourself, if you would do the peace concept of getting into having those agendas that we talked about earlier in the show, and then working on your mind and your mindset and those conditionings that we still continue to follow, and those things that really help us to begin to do the things that destroy our community. So there's systems in place to help us hurt ourselves, and we're going to have to do a better job of managing ourselves each day, every day, just one day at a time. And it begins with self-love, right? Yes, sir.
He's on 5972. He's on his other phone.
All right. Thank you. That's what I need to know. Thank you. Let me see if I can get to him right now. Thank you, Brother George. Let's see if we can get Dr. Bruce in here. I don't see it. I'm going to try this 919.
5-2.
Dr. Bruce, is this you? This is the 3347 number. I don't see
no,
Dr.
Five,
Bruce.
No, 5-7.
He's not in the queue. Tell him to call the number back. Yeah. See, sorry, folks. We got a delay here. We're going to try to get Dr. Bruce in. Tell Dr. Bruce, if you're listening, to call back to the call line. We can get him in that way. Right now, I don't see him. In the meantime, working on ourselves, right? And sometimes, you know what? We got to, this is one thing. We have to understand that things are not always going to go right. It's how you deal with the challenges in life, right? It's how you deal with those awkward moments where you kind of don't know what to do and you got to figure it out. But it's how you work to figure things out, right? How you handle stressful situations, for example, when things are not going your way, like right now, what do? Right? How do you handle it? Do you break all up? Do you trip? Do you get frustrated? You lash out? What's your strategy when things come that don't quite go smoothly as you thought? And so as we're in this moment or in this predicament with a live show right now and we're trying to get our guests in, okay, we got another brother in, just popped in, but I don't see Dr. Bruce. So we're going to continue on and we're going to continue to work. In the meantime, we got a great show coming up. Dr. Bruce is going to be talking about some things that are – all right, here he is. He's in now. Folks, without delay, we got Dr. Bruce. He's on the way. Dr. Bruce, are you there?
Been here all the while, Brother Marvin.
Well, I'm glad you finally came in. Thank you so much, sir.
I've been here, been here since 2 o'clock, my brother.
Well, here's the amazing thing, right? We know with technology, right, so we have to be patient with each other.
Yeah, I know. You know, I understand. Yeah, I understand. I've been here since the very beginning.
The audience has been waiting, and without further delay, I turn it over. Dr. George will be on with us, and we'll continue to do the work. I see Dr. Rogers has popped in as well, so we're going to get started. Dr. Bruce, it's on you.
All right. Thank you very much, Brother Marvin, and to all those texts that Brother George sent out. I hope that some of those people are tuned in today to our program. I sent him quite a few numbers, and I hope some tuned in. I sent him one the last minute, and if he gets a chance, I want him to go ahead and send that one out too. If he can do that, I sent him one last separate number because we're trying to get as many people listening as we possibly can. But be that as it may, want to thank Dr. Rogers too on last week for discussing the Slave Bible, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I want to thank Dr. Rogers for a great lecture on last week. And also want to thank Dr. Lafayette Maxwell, who I hope is tuned in today. If not, some of his students are probably tuned in, because those are some numbers I sent for Brother George also to send out. So anyway, we're really trying to pick it up. And to those who are tuned in, I wish you all would call a friend, call some people that you might know that might want to tune in to this program today. And we'll be on from now until 3:30 Eastern Standard Time. And I want to thank Sister Nanaviv Cherry for ordering some copies of my book, Recapturing the African Mind, which we're discussing today. I want to thank her for that order, and for also for letting her son know about the program today. So I want to give out those shout-outs before I get started today. And the first thing I'd like to do is kind
of
pick up on that slave.
Before you go there, give them that number so they can order the book, so they can be right along with us, if you don't mind.
Very good, Brother Ma. I'm glad you broke right in on me. And by the way, anytime I'm talking, always break in on me something I forget or something that you think I need to mention. If you want to order a copy of my book, Recapturing the African Mind, you can just give me a call at area code 919-956-5972. That's area code 919-956-5972. And I'm glad Brother Marvin asked out, because I want to give that number out anyway, because this is the number I'm speaking to you on now. But to those who are tuned in, get a pencil, get a piece of paper. I'm going to be coming with some terminology that you might find new to you, and some authors that you can go back and research on your own. And so just get on your iPad, take some notes, because I'm going to give some information that you probably won't be able to pick up due to the rapidity sometimes of my speech. But I do try to repeat myself. But get something to write on, or iPad or something, or a computer to take down some notes. But that phone number again is 919-956-5972. And last week, Dr. Rogers quite eloquently discussed the Slave Bible. And to those who didn't tune in on last week, he mentioned the fact that the Slave Bible, there was only a few of them that were actually published. And they talked about the slaves and what slaves were to follow in terms of their rules and regulations. And most of the information in the Slave Bible actually came from the New Testament, and very little from the Old Testament. And the Old Testament, of course, is a testament that talks about the freedom of the children of Israel from the Hebrews and those kinds of things. And European conquerors and slave makers did not want us as a people to know anything about freedom. They didn't want freedom to ever enter our minds. And as a matter of fact, when Toussaint Louverture and his comrades in Haiti during the Haitian Rebellion in about 1798, when they became independent from the French, the word went out around the world that a small nation in the islands of the Caribbean, Haiti, an island joined by now the so-called Dominican Republic, defeated the French. black people organized and defeated the French, and Haiti became the first nation in the Western Hemisphere to become independent. And when that happened, that word rang out over the whole of the entire world. As a matter of fact, that word rang out so much, and people in this country were so proud that they began to name their little communities, their little villages, their little towns that they lived in. Like, for example, Durham, North Carolina, named their business district, the Haiti district, the Haiti community, after Haiti, trying to say Haiti, but they said Haiti. But it was from the word Haiti. In Richmond, Virginia, there were areas also, like down in the Second Street area, that was full of black businesses. So then down in the southern part of this country, Alabama, Mississippi, I think it is, there's a small community that was called Little Africa. So black people, when they heard that other people who looked just like them became very, very, very exorbitant and very jubilant over this freedom that black people had defeated the white slave master, so they began to name other villages and communities after Haiti or Haiti or Little Africa or something to that respect. So the white enslaver has never wanted black people to hear anything about freedom. As a matter of fact, when Denmark Vesey down in South Carolina, in Charleston, South Carolina, led his slave revolt in the 1800s, Denmark Vesey, the word went out about what Denmark Vesey had done. The word went out about what Nat Turner did in 1831 during his slave revolt. So anything that spoke of or actually gave any hint about freedom, European people did not want black people to get the word on that. So in the slave Bible, any passages in the Bible about black people or about Africa, about Egypt or about Kemet, which is Egypt, they didn't want us to know anything about that. They didn't want us to know about the fact that the Queen of Sheba from down in Ethiopia left Ethiopia with her caravan and her retinue of her followers and left Ethiopia and went over into King Solomon's land and then met with King Solomon. And these were black people doing all this. And as Dr. Maxwell said on last week, it lets you know that we were very civilized people. We had caravans and roads and traveling and all kinds of things back during the times of the Bible. So they didn't, but European people, our enslavers, white people, did not want us to have this kind of information. They don't want you and I to understand that the first country ever mentioned in the scriptures of the Bible is Ethiopia in Genesis, before any country on this whole earth is mentioned in the scriptures of the Bible. Ethiopia is the one that's mentioned. Now, some Bibles call it Ethiopia, some Bibles call it Cush, but Cush is just another name for Ethiopia. But it's the first country ever mentioned in the scriptures of your Bible to those who are tuned in. And then later on, it talks about other nations of the earth, the original Hebrew people who were black people, the original people of Israel who were black, the original Cushites were black, all the people from Assyria and Chaldea and those up Palestine and those other nations that are mentioned in the Bible, in the Table of Nations, those were people who looked just like you and me, but Europeans never wanted us to know this. So just wanted to reiterate that information on the slave Bible and what it was really all about, and the fact that the only Bible that Europeans wanted us to have was the one that they themselves had translated and interpreted. As I said a few weeks ago, in order to get to the African mind, which is our topic today, recapturing the African mind, I'm reading from page 94 of my book, but I'm quoting a book called 500 Years of European Behavior and Its Effect on Africa and African People, page 209 of that book, 500 Years of European Behavior. And the author, Nana Buteyko, he makes this statement. He says, in order to get to the African mind, Europeans began to translate the Bible into African languages. And by 1876, some portion of the Bible had been translated into 50 languages. The whole Bible was translated into 7 languages and the New Testament into 9 languages, you see. And by 1926, the translations had grown to 244. After the first 50 years, the breakdown was as follows. 28 complete versions of the Bible, 59 New Testaments, some books in 138 languages, and some selected passages in 19 more languages. In other words, since 1876, 194 Bible translations had occurred. You see, and I mentioned too in one of my earlier lectures about how when I was in the capital city of Zimbabwe, Southern Africa, I went into a bookstore, and when I went into that bookstore, I saw the Bible there translated into the native language of the people of Harare, which is Ndebele. Ndebele, that's the language that our people speak in Zimbabwe. Ndebele, spelled N-D-B-E-L-E. N-D-B-E-L-E, that's the language. And the people also are called the Ndebele people. But they had translated the Bible into the language of the people so that they could get to our minds and take control of us. But now, ultimately, we must realize, brothers and sisters, and to those who are tuned in, that in Europeans getting to the African mind, their main objective was to get to the resources of our people, to get to the diamonds and the gold in South Africa, to get into the gold of the west coast of Africa, the cobalt and the uranium and the resources of the Congo. But in order to do that, they had to first take control of the minds of the people. And in training Africans, as we continue on with my book today, I'm about to finish chapter 4. On page 95, we talk about horse training methods applied to enslaved Africans, because an examination of horse training methods is necessary to fully appreciate the training techniques applied to African people. European people studied the training of horses. They studied the way that the dam, or the mother horse — the dam is a mother horse, sometimes she's called the mare, but when she's pregnant, she's called the dam. But the dam, or mare, the mother horse, is essential for the horse training process, while the stallion, or the father horse, is not involved at all. Now, that's very important. I'm going to go back over that for a minute. We're talking about horses here, horse training. The dam, or the mother horse, I repeat, is essential for the horse training process, while the stallion, or the black man, the father horse, is not involved at all. In nature, as I say in my book, it is the stallion's responsibility to lead, protect, and provide food and shelter for his herd. Upon capture, however, by the horse trainer, the stallion is first broken by the use of the whip. Now, as I talk about this, I want those in our listening audience to think about the way that African American men are sometimes treated in this society as compared to the way European horse trainers were treating the stallion, or the male horse. Upon capture, however, the stallion is first broken by the use of the whip. Afterwards, a bit is placed in his mouth to control his movements. Think about it now, black brothers and black sisters, but brothers, the bit was placed in the stallion's mouth to control his movements. And some stallions never did make the adjustment to the saddle and the bit. And those are they were castrated. If you couldn't make an adjustment to having a bit put in your mouth, or having your, in other words, to put it into modern-day terms, to have your speech taken away from you, and so that you could not stand up to the master, and the master could control you with that bit. If they couldn't, if you didn't make that adjustment to the bit, then they would castrate the stallion. And a castrated stallion is what we call a gelding. And the people who understand horses know what a gelding is, G-E-L-D-I-N-G, a gelding. A gelding is a horse which is highly prized for its brute strength. Listen carefully now. The gelding is a castrated stallion who is highly prized for his brute strength. He's still strong like the horse or like the man, but he has a gentle nature because he's been castrated, so his nature has become gentle. Many African-American men in the world today have been castrated by our European enslavers. Big, strong men, but can't stand up for anything. Big, powerful, 6'4", 6'5", African men who can't, who have money, entertainers and athletes on the basketball court and who are track stars and who are wide receivers and who are in the backfield and can take three or four men into the end zone with them like the refrigerator used to do. Big, strong men, but can't stand up for anything. They have been gelded. They've been castrated. They still are stallions, and they have the brute strength of a stallion, but they are gentle by nature. So this is why European people have never wanted African people to come into contact with knowledge and wisdom and understanding, and especially if they have not been castrated, because they know that they would have problems with us. You see, look at Colin Kaepernick. He stood alone for the most part. Look at Jim Brown. Look at Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali. Look at all those brothers, how they stood with Muhammad Ali back in the day and organized with him for more rights in America for our people. They had not been castrated. But today, it's hard to get us to become stallions like we once were. So European people said, we're going to train these Africans in the same way that the horse trainer trains horses. So essentially then, man, or the white man, becomes the stallion to the mother horse, who plays the most important role in the offspring's development. You see, so the white man becomes a stallion, and then the mother or the dam of the baby horse begins to train her child without a man around, you see. And so I talk about this in my book, and you can get more information on that if you want to go back on page 95 and 96. So on 97, as I say in my book, Recapturing the African Mind, the techniques for training enslaved Africans were adapted to resemble those used to train horses due to the lifespan and stages of development of the horse. You see, so they saw quite a few similarities of between black men and black women and their training and the training of horses, and that's what they put to work, and I talk about this in my book. Now, as I continue on with the book, Recapturing the African Mind, for the next few minutes, horse training methods, Black Beauty. I talk about Black Beauty in my book. I'm on page 103 to those who have a copy of the book and who are in our classroom on the African American Empowerment Program this afternoon. We're on page 103, students. And at the top of 103, I talk about, after I just finished discussing horses, I'm talking about the story of Black Beauty. Now, let me just say something. I started to say digress, but I'm not digressing. I'm still on the subject. Let me make something very, very, very clear here, and that is that many, many years ago, I had the chance to travel to Chicago, Illinois, to visit one of our great scholars and historians who has now gone on to the ancestors. And to those who are tuned in and who are very familiar with African history and African studies, his name was John Jackson. And those who may not be familiar, jot his name down, go to your computer, look him up. John G. Jackson, as a matter of fact, is his name. Middle initial was G. John G. Jackson. He authored a book called Introduction to African Civilizations. And in that book, Introduction to African Civilizations, Dr. Jackson talks about African history from the very beginning. He starts off with Ethiopia, then Egypt, talks about the Moors, talks about Africans in America before Columbus, talks about the kingdoms of West Africa, Ghana, Mali, Songhai. But that's one of his books called Introduction to African Civilizations. And he also wrote a book called The Pagan Origins of the Christ Myth, and another book called The Ages of Gold and Silver. And those are just a few of the books by Dr. John G. Jackson. But in the early, I guess, mid-1980s, I had a chance to go to Chicago, and I visited Dr. Jackson's apartment in Chicago, Illinois. And when I went in, I noticed that, and some of y'all who have been listening to me have heard me mention this before, as you'll hear me repeat things over and over and over, the only way the snow can saturate the earth and moisturize the earth and cause the earth to become wet is to just keep on falling over and over and over and over and saturate the earth. So in the same way the rain does, I want to saturate your minds, and I might repeat things over and over until it sets into your minds and it becomes a part of you and your minds become mushed and are able to take seeds and grow and develop. So if you hear me repeat something, I know I've repeated it and I'm doing it on purpose. But Dr. Jackson, when I went to his house, he had a stack of books on his kitchen table. I'll never forget it. And he had books around him on a bookshelf in the on the kitchen table. And the ones on the kitchen table were the ones that he was planning to he was doing research with at arm's length. So I asked him, I said, Dr. Jackson, why do you have all these books that are not, but he had books about folklore, books about magic. He had books about astrology. He had books about the adventures of fairies and fairy tales and Mother Goose rhymes and all kinds of things. And so I asked him, I said, why are these books important? He says, as I say to you, to those who are tuned in order to research and to discover or uncover our history, we have to sometimes look at the mythology of the white man, which might not necessarily be mythology, because there's some truth in the mythology that we have to oftentimes uncover. So I hope you all are tuned in and listening as I get into Black Beauty, and the time seems like it goes so very quickly. But I want to acquaint you with a term here called euhemerism. Now, most of you probably have never heard that term, but if you got a pen, get a pen, a piece of paper, write it down, look it up, or type it into your computer. I'm going to spell it. Euhemerism. And euhemerism is spelled euhemerism. I'll repeat it. euhemerism. Euhemerism. Or euhemerism, depending on how you pronounce it. But I'm going to define that word for you as I take you right back into my book from John G. Jackson and the books on his kitchen table in Chicago, Illinois, in 1985. I'm going to tie all this in together. Euhemerism, by definition, is an approach to the interpretation of mythology. Let me repeat that part of it. It's an approach to the interpretation of mythology in which mythological accounts are presumed to have originated from real historical events or personages. I'm going to repeat that definition again. Euhemerism, spelled euhemerism, is an approach to the interpretation of mythology in which mythological accounts are presumed to have originated from real historical events. So in other words, what this is saying is that you may think something is a myth, but behind the myth, there's some fact. And there's a writer by the name of David McRitchie who wrote a book called Ancient and Modern Britons, and he talks about the fairies in ancient Britain. He talks about the pixies or the fairies. And what we have found is that he talked about pixies and fairies, but the stories of these pixies and fairies were based upon the people called the Twa, or the little 4 foot 5 inch people from Africa who had migrated into the British Isles and moreover had populated the whole of this entire planet. You see, that's what the fairy tales that we had growing up, fairy tales and fairies and fairies and tooth fairies and all these kinds of things. It's mythology, of course, but the mythology was based on truth, and it's called euhemerism. And this is what David McRitchie discovered. And so these accounts become myths as they are exaggerated when people begin to retell these stories over and over and over. They become myths, but those myths are based on something. And just another experience that I need to relate to you all here today is an experience I had flying to another engagement somewhere else in the country. I can't remember where it was. But there was a pilot on the plane, and he saw me reading something, not the pilot, because the pilot was flying the plane, but one of the flight attendants saw me reading something, and he asked me what it was. And I was reading a book by Ivan Van Sertima called African Presence in Early Europe, and I asked him where he was from, and he told me he was from Sweden. And then when I told him what I was reading, and I was reading about the fairy tales of white Swedish people about fairies and elves and dwarfs and all those kinds of things, and the elves and the shoebaker, he said, oh, as a child, we always knew about the little black people who had inhabited our lands and our countries, and they're in the fairy tales. He just kind of confirmed through experience of growing up in Sweden, a white Swedish man, of what I was reading about in Ivan Van Sertima's book. So as we take this information that I'm giving you from McRitchie and the definition of euphemerism and my experience here, it leads me into what we were talking about in terms of horses, the story of Black Beauty. Now, when we grew up, page 103 of my book, we were always taught that Black Beauty was the story of a horse. But we have found that Black Beauty is not. Anyway, let's go back to it. Page 103 in my book, in the European classic tale of Black Beauty, the life of the horse, as it is very interestingly told by the author Anna Sewell, very closely parallels the life of the African slave. Sewell published her book in 1877, shortly after the abolition of slavery in America. Although she focused on making people aware of the suffering of horses, in so doing, she accurately described the life of African slaves. Now, I'm out of the book for a minute, brothers and sisters. This is me editorializing now. What I'm about to say is that the story of Black Beauty was not really about a horse, but she used the horse to discuss the situation of Africans on the plantations of America, but she really was talking about you and I in the book Black Beauty. But when I grew up, and when most of you grew up, you thought that Black Beauty was about a pretty, beautiful, shiny, glossy black horse. But the horse, that's mythology that has something else behind it, the euphemerism that I was talking about earlier. Now, I'm back to the book. For instance, in one passage in the book, the mother of Black Beauty says of the other colts, and I'm quoting the mother of Black Beauty, his horse is talking, so you know there's something else behind it because horses don't talk. And she said, these colts are very good, but they have not learned good manners. You have been well-bred and well-born, and I hope you will grow up to be gentle and good. Do your work willingly. Now, this is what the mother of Black Beauty, the horse, said to Black Beauty. Said, these colts are very good, but they have not learned. Think about things, brothers and sisters, our mothers and fathers taught us, and that you teach your children even today. These colts are very good, but they have not learned good manners. You have been well-bred and well-born, and I hope you will grow up to be gentle and good. Do your work willingly. Now, I'm going on in the book. the mother of Black Beauty was well trained by the master due to the absence of the male horse or the stallion that we talked about earlier. And she, in turn, trained her colt, Black Beauty, to do the will of the master. I want you to think about this now. We're talking about horses, and we're talking about Black Beauty and colts and the rearing of horses. But really, we're talking about the way Black people were trained to obey their masters during the plantation days of this country. And some of that stems even today. Some of us on our jobs are the same way today in corporate America. I'm going on with my book. In the chapter of Black Beauty called My Break, there's a chapter called My Breaking In. Black Beauty explains the process of breaking in and says, Black Beauty says, it means to teach a horse to wear a saddle and a bridle and to carry a man, woman, or child on your back and to go just the way they wish and to go quietly. That's what breaking in is about. Many of us have been broken in today, been trained to carry a man or woman on our backs and to go just the way they wish and go quietly. Not necessarily to physically carry people on our backs today, of course, but what I'm saying here in the book is that many of us go quietly and do just as we are told to do. Back to the book. Black Beauty learned well the teachings of his mother, so it was not difficult to break him. Breaking and training of horses closely resembles the schooling of a human child, both of which are necessary if they are to be of service to their masters. Horse handlers use saddles and bridles with their various component parts, stirrups, girths, and the like, which have become very common as a part of the riding life that most people seldom give them a thought. Okay, but all of these things are mechanisms of control. Okay. And another thing I want to mention is that horses are sold from plantation to plantation. What happened to us in slavery? Sold from plantation to plantation. Mr. Thomas's plantation in the morning. Mr. Johnson's plantation in the evening. Mr. Jackson's plantation at some time. And Mr. Gillicuddy's plantation, you see. The same way horses are trained. Now, when time came for iron shoes or horseshoes to be fitted on Black Beauty along with a collar and blinkers, he wanted to kick out in protest, but he could not. As he says, he could not kick such a good master. Like many of us, I remember during the 60s, during the Civil Rights Movement, many of us were talking about standing up to our slave masters and people on our jobs, and many of us did not do that. Why? Because we could not stand up against such a good master. The same thing that Black Beauty said. And I'm back to the book now. Many slaves on the plantation, especially house slaves, referred to their masters as good. They referred to them this way because they ate good in relation to the other slaves, dressed in the discarded clothes of the master, and lived in the house and were so close to the master. You see. So, and then I talk about another horse here who was called Merrylegs on the plantation with Black Beauty, and another horse called Ginger. And there's a reason Merrylegs was called Merrylegs, because Merrylegs was strong and spirited, and then Ginger was a horse that had a little attitude. Ginger, what is Ginger? What is the spice Ginger? It's a little hot, got a little kick to it. So that's why the horse was named Ginger, you see. So Black Beauty then, brothers and sisters, was not about the training of a horse, but it was about the training of the slaves. You see, I wanted to make that part very clear here on the African American Empowerment Podcast today. And then I talk about Willie Lynch, which I'm not going to talk about now. I'm going to take a couple of minutes before we go to our lines and take some phone calls. The Willie Lynch method, understand, brothers and sisters, that I'm a person who I really believe in facts that can be documented and facts that are strong that you can take anywhere and speak about and teach about and write about and broadcast about, and nobody can touch it. Now, Willie Lynch is very questionable, whether or not Willie Lynch existed and all that we know. Of course, we understand that a lot of those techniques that Willie Lynch used in the Willie Lynch letter are still used today, but there's a lot of questions about the the origin of it and where it really came from and that kind of thing. But in my book, I talk on page 110 about methods of force, fear, and fraud, about a real book that you can look up, which is very similar to the Willie Lynch theory, a book written by a man by the name of Richard Hildreth, who was born in Deerfield, Massachusetts, and a son of a minister. And he left Boston and went to Florida after graduating from Harvard University in search of a more helpful condition for his tuberculosis. But while he was in Florida, the white man, Richard Hildreth, lived on a slave plantation. And while he was there, he developed an intense hatred for the slave system. He wrote two important books during his 18 months on the plantation. One was a novel called The Slave, or Memoirs of a Fugitive, and the other book was called Despotism in America, an analysis. We talked about that word a few weeks ago, an analysis, an analysis, your anal region. We talked about it. We're not going back into it today. Those who missed class got to go online and listen to the old programs. But he wrote a book called Despotism in America, an analysis or analysis of the deleterious effects of slavery on the economic and political development of the southern states. And in this book, he talks about the methods that the slave holders or the plantation owners used in controlling the slaves, which was very similar to Willie Lynch. But you can go into a library and find this book, Despotism in America by Richard Hildreth. And you can stand anywhere with this. You don't have to anybody say, well, I don't know if it's really true or it happened. We know what Willie Lynch talks about. We know it happened. We know that. But in terms of being able to stand and nobody being able to touch your research and what you're doing, Richard Hildreth taught the three mechanisms of control in his book. On page 111, I talk about it. The first one he talks about is force. Those masters whose tempers are harsh, violent, and brutal, especially those who have never been softened by education, they rely principally upon force. Is the slave late in coming to the field? 20 lashes. Is he idle? 30 lashes. Is he guilty of the slightest act of insubordination? 100 lashes. Should he dare to offer any resistance, let him be shot, stabbed, beat to the ground with a club. Some brief specimen of this system of plantation management, which some call cruel, but which those who follow it merely describe as vigorous and efficient. This is the method of force that many of the slave masters use. Some people call it cruel. Some call it vigorous, but it really is vigorous and efficient. Another method of that Richard Hildreth talks about in his book is fear. Fear. Now, fear, he says, there are many men who cannot look without some feelings of sympathetic pain, or at least of instinctive disgust, upon the body of an old man or woman, perhaps cut up with a lash and scored with bloody gashes. The screams, outcries of the victims affect them. They endeavor to avoid the use of the whip and to govern as far as possible by the fear of the whip. Strive by bitter and alarming words the place of action, but the words soon lose their efficacy. And the master who governs upon the wordy plan soon comes to keep both himself and his slaves in a constant state of irritation and ill feeling by a process of fault finding, scolding, and threat, which becomes a habit and goes on from one year into another. That's the process of fear. Just put fear in them. You got force, fear, and the third of his methods, according to Richard Hildreth in his book, Despotism in America, page 41 through 47, he says many masters use fraud. Fraud, he says, there are some masters who pride themselves upon their cunning and superior knowledge of human nature who make considerable use of fraud in the management of their slaves. One of the most usual applications of it is the attempt to take advantage of the religious feelings of the slaves and to impress them with the idea that obedience, honesty toward their masters, humble submission, and other plantation-like virtues are religious duties. In other words, brothers and sisters, this is one that was very similar to what Dr. Rogers was talking about on last week with the slave Bible, and what I was talking about when I gave the sermon about what some of the slaves were receiving on the plantation. In other words, they want to make you feel guilty because of your religion, and to make you stay in line because they impose fraud upon you by making you think that God does not like the fact that you go against your master. And you do not want to go against your master. If you do, you're going against God. So many slave masters use fraud as a third method. And I'm back to the book here. Hildreth says, this stratagem is chiefly practiced by slaveholding clergymen or preachers and church members. The religious people of the South have been at the pains of preparing a slave catechism. In some places, they have established slave Sunday schools, and meetings for slave worships are regularly held. Some slave masters look upon religion among slaves merely as a means of plantation discipline and please themselves with the idea that the more religious their slaves are, the easier they may be managed. End of quote. Saying that the more religious the slaves are, the more easier the master can manage them. I want you all to think about yourselves and your friends and people that you know, those of our people, religious people. Oftentimes, religious people tend to be the ones who are more humble and go along with the slave master. But, there was a Nat Turner. There was a Harriet Tubman. There was a Sojourner Truth. There was an Ida B. Wells. These were religious people, but they saw religion from the Old Testament way and recognized that all human beings are to be free, and they went against this mechanism of fraud that the plantation owners were using to control us as a people. So that's the end of that particular chapter. I'm going to give it back to Brother George, Brother Marvin, Brother George, Brother Marvin, so that we can take some questions and some comments and see what's going on in the minds of our people. I hope the lines are full, Brother Marvin. I'm right back to you now.
Doctor. Great job. And I just want to say from the beginning, right, some of this might not sit well with some of our people, but it's education. Go do your research on it and follow up. If it makes you uncomfortable, right, if it makes you feel a certain way, that's a good thing. Maybe you should look more into it, right? But it's about education. It's about developing our people to think for themselves again, and the tools and the strategies that were used and put in place to oppress us and continue to control us, to make us more ready for enslavement, right? So that's just it. And so, Dr. Bruce, you've done a great job, great job of explaining those tools and strategies. And Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. Y'all ready to go to the lines? Oh, I wanted, before, if you have, if you want your number, you don't have to hang up, right? Don't hang up. Listen to the comments. Listen to the questions. If you don't want to talk, just say, hey, I'm here. I'm from Baltimore or wherever you're from. And then say, I have a comment. But don't hang up, because there's some good commentary, some good dialogue that's going to go on in the Q&A. All right, Brother George.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I always thought that there was something significant about mythology. And Dr. Bridges has confirmed that, you know, and I hope that everyone listens and in order for them to learn more about that.
All right, let's go to the lines. Y'all ready? I'm ready. I'm going over to, man, they had their hands up for a long time, Dr. Bruce, so they got a question for you. All right, you're on live. I'm bringing you in, let's see, 3347. You're on live with the Empowerment, 3347. You there?
All right, let's move down to 5924.
Hello. Hi, this is Brother Kwazi Kraft. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just going to continue to listen. I love this. This is my Bible. I'm just learning so much. I've listened to Dr. Goodness many a times. I've heard him on with Dr. Rogers on his show on Tuesday night. So, yes, I'm going to continue to listen and most definitely order the book. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Bridges.
I'll be getting in touch with you later on today because I know you called me, and I want to go ahead and get your information. As a matter of fact, you can text your information to the number that you called me on, which is not the one I'm speaking on now, the one I gave out, but you called me on a good one. So just text me your address and everything, and I'll go ahead and get your book out the first of next week, Brother Kwazi.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Just want to let you know I did get your call.
Thank you. All right.
All right, Brother Mom, back to you.
All right. 9282. You're on live with the Empowerment Hour. Thank you for calling. Where are you calling from?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, brothers. I'm from Richmond here in Richmond, Virginia.
Hey, brother.
Just listening to yes, sir. Y'all doing all right today?
Yes, sir.
Doing all right. Doing all right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I just want to say right quick, you know, that the whole topic of recapturing the mind is vital. It's so important because I do feel that once we recapture our minds, we will realize certain things. And the one thing in particular I think we need to realize as a people that hell is not a pathway to heaven. You don't have to go through hell to get to heaven, you know, and we need to really understand and see what's going on around us because this country is deteriorating before our eyes, and we just don't see it. We don't see it. This country, as we know it today, is falling apart, and in the very near future, a new government, a new system, a new something going to be in place. And the pity of it all, if we're not creating that, then we're going to be right back in the position that we're in today. So we must recapture our minds in order to create or see heaven. If we don't create heaven, we will never see heaven. And you cannot create heaven with a hellish mind. You know? And we need to understand and realize that. We have to recapture our minds. I mean the whole system, the whole political structure, the whole economic structure, the whole religious structure, as Dr. Bruce was, the whole thing is an illusion and it's falling apart right before us. And we need to understand that as a people, we do not have to go through hell to get to heaven. God creates heaven. We capture our minds, and we will create heaven. Thanks for the opportunity to share that, brother. And y'all keep doing what you're doing, and I'll support you in any way I can.
All right. Thank you, brother. You got any comments for that, Dr. Bruce? Thank you, sir.
Yes, I agree with the brother 100%. And when he said, I'll support you any way I can, I would like for him to, not just him, but to those who are tuned in, tell some other people about this program every Saturday at 2 o'clock. Tell people about this program every Saturday at 2 o'clock and also about Dr. Rogers' program on every Tuesday night. We're trying to build these programs up, but and Brother Marvin, you can give Dr. Rogers information, I guess, near the end of the program. But every Saturday at 2 o'clock, the African American Empowerment Program is on. And just dial this number and have some people to tune in to listen, have your students, your children to listen, and they can learn a lot. Because when it comes to anyway, I don't want to lecture again. Let's go on to the lines because you got the full board, don't you?
Yes, I do. That's right, Dr. Bruce. I'm going to 0946. 0946, you're live on Empowerment Saturday and Empowerment Network. Talk to us, caller.
Yes. Yes. Good afternoon. I have really, really enjoyed this information. And one of the things that I just wanted to say is that part of what Dr. Bruce was talking about is about saying things over and over again, the saturation of that, and the more that we hear it, the more that we're learned. But what I got from Dr. Bruce today was how that our consciousness has been desensitized, and the way I heard him in my mind's eye breaking it down today, because he touched on a lot of things. First of all, he talked about the system, one of the systems of white supremacy, which is slavery. He talked about the process based on what he was saying. And then he talked about the strategy, the plan of action, how things came to play and what was done. And then he talked about the symbolism, which is setting symbols to represent ideas, talking about the mythology. And then he talked about how things are sanctioned, where they become approved and valid. And I just heard that system in my mind while he was talking, that white supremacy is based on systems, strategy, symbolism, and sanctioning things. Mm. And if we adopt that process of repetition and be consistent with it and create systematic teaching like what's going on today, then we are going to be in better shape. And so I just want to say thank you for this platform of constantly reiterating in our minds. And Dr. Rogers, just fantastic. Thank you so much for breaking down just those snippets of how this whole thing works together, because it's very pronged. It's not just one thing. And I appreciate you touching on those snippets of things to let us see how encompassing all of this is. And that's all I'd like to say is, once again, thank you for this platform and your contribution. And how much is your book?
$25.
Okay.
Let me give you my number again. Would you like for you to
I have the number. I wrote it down.
Okay, good. You can call me and leave a message, and I'll call you back. Be glad to talk to you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Only thing I'd like to say to that, Brother Martin, I just jumped in because you always ask me about comments. I'm assuming that's where you're going with
you
this.
You know it.
But
you know
I'm looking at our Yeah, okay, and I'm looking at our time, too. I want to thank the sister. I didn't know she really told me what I said. I didn't know I did all that. She said I talked about the system, and I talked about the strategies that they use and the saturation of the minds by doing it over and over and over again, and the processes that were used in the establishment and making slaves in this country, and how we can get away from it. And I'm glad that she really – I know that I did that in my book, and I talk about it, but – I like the way she laid it out. I really appreciate her phone call. Okay, we can try another one, Brother Marvin. And sounds like we got some first-time people, too.
All right, we're doing good. Let's go down to 8502. You're on live with the Empowerment Network. And Dr. Bruce, do you have a question or comment? 8502.
Yes, good afternoon, Brother Marvin and Brother Bridges. Thank
you,
you
doing,
again,
sir,
for another wonderful Saturday afternoon. It makes me, listening to this, it makes me think about when you go to church and people get happy and start shouting, and they would say that was the Holy Ghost, but really it was about the truth, hearing the truth. And once you hear something and you know it and it's the truth, how much better it makes you feel.
Amen.
How it makes you change the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you think, you know, and you give all of that baggage that you're carrying and whatnot and frees you up. It's like having on a pair of shoes that's too tight and you take it off. You know how good that really feels.
I heard that. All right. Dr. Bruce, thank you for calling, brother.
Oh, yes, brother, I agree. I just want to thank the brother for calling and thank him for his comments, brother. It really makes me feel good that I am getting through to somebody, because oftentimes I wonder if I'm making any sense or if I'm getting through. So that's good to hear.
All right, we're going down to 0148. You're live on the Empowerment Network with Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment?
Real quickly. Thank you for picking my call. Number one, there's a quote by Muhammad Ali that says, it's the repetitions of affirmation that leads to belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. From your perspective, Dr. Bridges, can black people rid themselves of religion?
That's another whole lecture, brother. We as a people are already spiritual people, and this is one thing that our enslavers in this country and our colonizers on the continent of Africa recognized about us from the very beginning. So that spirituality, I think, is a part of us. Many of us try to disown it or say it's not a part of us or don't believe in it or whatever. But we have innately, I think, because, and I think this spirituality comes from our historical place in the world, from being close to the natural creation in ancient times down by the base of Mount Kilimanjaro about 4 million years ago, when black men and black women first populated the earth. We were out in the environment and in tune with nature. So being in tune with nature and the goings on of the creation, then it makes us become a spiritual people. And Europeans use that to their advantage by making us become religious, and we mixed up spirituality with religion. You see, so in order for us so we really don't need to get rid of it, but we need to realize that our religion that we have, or our spirituality, whichever one you're talking about, it needs to work for us as a people. Whatever it is, keep it, use it to make it work for you as a people. If it's not working for you, and for us to uplift our people and to cause us to grow and develop and to stand up and be men and women on this planet, then we don't need it. But so my advice to anyone who is religious or is spiritual, quote unquote, maybe one and the same, whatever, we won't get into all that discussion, but use that religion to make it better for us as a people.
Amen to that. 39:22. You're up next. You're live with Dr. Bruce and Brother George and myself. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah.
3922.
Brother.
Hey,
brother,
welcome to the show.
Brother Maliki, how you doing?
Hey, Maliki.
Yes, sir. Bruce, Brother Bruce, teach. You know, religion can be good and it can be dangerous. You know, I was in Ghana and every car has got praise the Lord. I was saying pass the ammunition. A sister said they need some black Jesus here. I was in Kenya. Everything was Catholic. They want to go to Catholic church. They want to be Catholic. We need our tradition. Like we said, there's nothing wrong with having religion, but let's have something that benefits us. And I just want to say, Brother Bruce, you, Brother Rogers, and Brother Marvin, Brother George, you all are doing a great job and keep up the good work. Aluta continua. The struggle continues.
All right. Thank you, brother.
I love it. Thank you, Brother Maliki, and I'm glad you tuned in, too. And he's becoming a regular here in the classroom on the African-American Empowerment Program. And since he mentioned that about Africa, if there are any other callers who are listening on the line, on the computer, if you're on the computer, go to the line, who have been to the continent of Africa, and I'd like for you just to express what it is that you saw on the continent of Africa in terms of us and the religion that we have in Africa. I'd like to just hear what some other people would have to say about it, because on the back of my book, I have here, along with a whole series of things, on the continent of Africa, pictures of a white Jesus bearing no resemblance to the inhabitants are prominently displayed and vigorously defended. Let me repeat that again. On the continent of Africa, and this is from the back of my book, pictures of a white Jesus bearing no resemblance to the inhabitants of Africa or of that country in Africa, those pictures are prominently displayed and vigorously defended. So Brother Maliki is right, and I think he really confirms what I was saying, and that is that Europeans, when they saw that we were a spiritual people, they hoisted upon us their religion, not their religion because it's not theirs. Let me change that. Our religion as translated by them to control us. All right, we can go to another caller, brother. Thank you again, Mother Maliki.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Maliki, and thank you, Dr. Bruce, for that clarification. Let's go down to 5347. You are live on the Empowerment Hour, 5347.
Hey, how y'all guys doing today? Hello?
Peace, peace,
doing
brother,
good.
Peace, brother.
Doing good, sir.
All right, man. I'm down here in New Bern working. Just wanted to say thanks to all you guys, man, for what you're doing. And Brother Bruce, that word was euphorium that you was talking about, the interjection of the mythology having substance, not just symbols.
No, you'd like me to repeat that, brother?
Yes, yes, please.
I'll repeat it, and I'll also spell it again for you, and I like that because the brother's trying to learn, trying to know some things. It's called euhemerism, and I'll spell it.
Euhemerism.
And let me spell it for you. And also to those who may have tuned in late or who might have been just like you, because oftentimes people, like I said, don't get it the first time. But euhemerism, spell E as in E-U-H-E-M, that's E-U-H-E-M-E-R-I-S-M, E-U-H-E-M-E-R-I-S-M. And
okay.
That's an approach to the interpretation of mythology. In other words, the way that mythology is interpreted, in which these mythological accounts are presumed to have originated from real historical events. And there's a lot of things that go on in our lives today, as I talked with Brother George, Brother Marvin earlier. For example, even I was talking about all these Marvel comics, these superheroes that white people have today that got y'all going to the movies and looking at Spider-Man and Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Tin Man and all of these superheroes are just offspring or offshoots of the ancient gods and goddesses of Ethiopia and Kemet that white people have studied and put together stories about their powers, like Superman and Zeus, and all these are the same thing. Jesus, Zeus, all this. It's been taken from our culture and our heritage, which is another lecture. I don't want to get off into that because that's another whole discussion that I do on the origins of the superheroes that we watch in the movies. They came from your and my culture and our civilization, and they've taken it and capitalized upon it and have given it back to us, and we don't know that it's all about us. In the same way that they gave us Black Beauty, and we didn't know that Black Beauty was about us. In the same way that they gave us Superman, and it was about us. And Batman, that goes back into our history. And in the same way that the elves and the dwarfs and the fairies and all that goes back, and Jack and the Beanstalk and Humpty Dumpty, and all this goes back into our culture that they've taken and transformed it into a way for them to make money. Okay, Brother Marvin, don't they get me started. I know you got some other calls. We want to try to hit as many as we can.
9770, you're on live. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I'm calling from Maryland, and I find the analogy with Black Beauty to be very interesting, and it was presented extremely well. And what I also want to say is that I look at the Black Beauty and the mare or the mother horse as being sort of like a saying that's in Islam, which says that heaven is at the feet of the mother, and it's the mother that trains the child in order to survive. And so I can see that the information that was given about the mare and what the mare says about being obedient and all of that, and I equate that with teaching a child survival and, you know, the circumstances that they were in terms of slavery. And so the mother this day needs to do that same thing, not teach them to be obedient to white people, but teach them the information that they need to survive in this environment that we're in today. And I guess that goes back to recapturing the African mind. Okay? That's the only way you're going to survive. We capturing the African mind. So that's all of my comment. Thank you for saturating my mind today.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, for your call, sister, and for clarifying that. And I think that was a good call, Brother Martin. Have you got a 7955 on the board?
Get an amen on that, sister. You get an amen on that. All right. Let's go down to 6511. 6511, you're live on the Empowerment Network. 6511.
Yes, I'm listening to you. What I want to say, we don't want to go back in slavery days again. That's what the whole comment about, slavery days. Because I'm the West Indian guy, Dean, you know, from the Caribbean. In the early days, black folks couldn't go to gas station. They have a sign that we don't serve colored guests. We come a long way, but we want to come a longer way, you know. Because what I'm trying to say right now in Durham, Brother Bruce listening here, Brother Bruce listening, you have a place called Fargo, South Fargo. Right now, the blacks now have the place, and the whites coming in, they're taking over. The black folks got to go somewhere to live. Where they going to go? In the bush?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody know where they going to go. And that's a crazy thing going on there. Black folks can't have nothing nice. One time I heard my wife's cousin say, husband say, when you're black, get back. And when you're white, step forward. That's a crazy saying. That's a crazy saying. You understand? So when Book said capture the African mind, he's really right. Some people want to understand what the book means. I think I understand what the book means, you know. Black folks got to stand up for what we want, you know. And the show is a pretty good show. You learn, you listen to the show, you learn a lot if you understand it. If you don't understand, you ask. So all what I got to say, the show is a very interesting show. And I'll keep it on. That's all I got to say. Thank you for that show. Yeah.
All right, good call, definitely. Brother Marvin. I don't
sir.
Have a comment. Agree with the brother.
Absolutely.
100%.
Thank you, brother, for your call. Let's go on over to 4541. 4541, you're next. You're alive and you're on. Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself, do you have a question or comment? 4541.
Just want to say that I'm enjoying the show. And I did have the opportunity to go to Africa a few years ago. I was in two different countries, Uganda and Rwanda. And I haven't seen a black Jesus yet. So Brother Bruce, right.
All right. Thank you, sir.
That's why I wanted that call, you see. So it's all over Africa. So you see very clearly, brothers and sisters and our listeners, that the Europeans used our African spirituality and our belief in God and turned it around and made him the God, and we follow him as opposed to following God. And that first call, Brother Malik, was all the cars, all the businesses, everything. And everything. All right, Brother Marvin, I'm not going to talk long. You might have some more. You got a 7955 on?
We're just about out. We're at 7955, but we don't have very much time, so let's get this one in, and then it's going to be a wrap. 7955, you're live. We got about a minute left in the show.
Okay, I won't take too long. I just want to say how happy I am and how proud I am to always get the opportunity to sit and listen to my uncle just share his intelligence out with the community and the world. And I think what one of the things that's really resonating with me is about spirituality and religion, how we can make it work for ourselves, and just thinking about going back to what you were talking about in the Haitian Revolution and how the Haitians, the spirit of the low and the Orisha begin to rise with these like fiery elements to help move forward that revolution, and what are the ways in which that we can really harness spirituality so that it empowers us and it continues to strengthen us and continues to keep us connected to all of our like ancestral and homeland glory. But anyways, it's always just such an honor for me to just sit under the tutelage of my uncle.
All right. Thank you,
thank
sister.
You so
thank
much.
You, Dr. Bruce. Thank you, Brother George. This is it for today. We're running completely out of time. Come back next week, and thank you so much again for joining the show. It's the Empowerment Network. 365 days.
where the brave dare not go to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest. Without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest.
Peace and quietness you're sure to find,
and the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars still strong.